Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 23 of our series of podcasts covering the entire run of the X-Files. And today we're having a look at Humbug and the Calasari. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and I'm joined by Andrew Blaker. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Carl. Great to be here with you.
Yeah, great to talk to you again. How's it going?
Oh, it's going just fine here, ready to get into these episodes.
Good stuff. And, well, one episode that's very highly regarded by most fans. And I suppose it's no secret that that's Humbug, which is the 20th episode of Season 2. It was first broadcast in March 1995, and it was written by Darren Morgan and directed by Kim Manners. And, of course, this is the episode in which Mulder and Scully travel to a small town in Florida, which is inhabited by sideshow performers, to search for a killer. So, I mean, I had the good fortune to have an in-depth chat about this on the main X-Cast podcast with Tanya Hernandez. We had a good time. So over to you, really, Andrew. I mean, it's an episode I like a lot, but what do you think about it?
Yeah, no, I really like this episode. I mean, it's a solid episode. It's one of the first, I believe, comedic episodes of the series, really. And I think it's a great outing. It would be kind of a sign of how the X-Files would blend scary and drama and comedy all together down the road. It's the first Darren Morgan episode, I believe, the first actually written by him. And it's quintessential Darren Morgan. I mean, I actually rewatched this last night in preparation for this, and I noted some recurring themes that are, you know, in Humbug, Clyde Bruckman, all the way through to season 10's Mulder and Scully Meet the Weremonster. So, you know, without even knowing who wrote it, you can tell it's a Darren Morgan episode.
Absolutely, yeah. The first proper Darren Morgan episode, I mean, he'd had a story credit on Blood, mm-hmm. and of course he'd appeared on screen in his rubber suit as the Fluke Man.
Yes.
But yeah, this is his first proper episode. So tell me about these themes you've noticed, and tell me which parts of Humbug, like, you know, you think kind of encapsulate those.
Yeah, the biggest one that stood out to me is his fascination with anyone who kind of has an outsider status. I mean, who's more outsider than a traveling band of, you know, circus freaks, so to speak? I mean, it, you know, that's what this entire episode is about. Clyde Bruckman in season 3, outsider. Yeah. Jose Chung, a bit of an outsider, at least outsider themes present, all the way to the weremonster, you know, a lizard that turns into a human. He's has this fascination with people on the fringes of society and kind of what it means to be an outsider, how the outsider sees the world, things like that. I should say there's a number of characters, actors rather, in this episode that will pop up in several more of his episodes, especially Alex Dakin, I believe that's what you say his last name. He's, I think he was in almost every single Darren Morgan episode throughout the series. I'm excited to see if maybe we'll see him in season 11. I don't know, but here he plays the curator, I believe, the museum curator, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
and you know, a great turn. You never actually see him face on or anything, but you know, he sets the stage for really what his contribution to the series will be.
Yeah, you mentioned Alex Dakin, and more generally, I think it's a very well cast episode. You know, and you've got a mix of, like, you know, people who have actual experience performing in sideshows and things, and also just kind of quirky, offbeat character actors. People like Michael J. Anderson, who plays the guy at the reception. It's a particularly well-cast episode, I think. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. And one thing I noticed, too, even from the very beginning, which I got to say, that teaser is a great teaser. I mean, it's just really, really spot on. The funeral scene, which is one of the first scenes in the episode, is just – I want to talk about that one because that kind of sets the stage for what you're going to get in the episode. You've got some great characters, people who are on screen for even only a single scene, and yet one thing that I felt watching it was he, Darren Morgan, rather, has a great command of characterization. You feel like you know a little something about these characters from the very limited exposure you get to them. He's good at writing characters, I think, comedic characters anyway. And this episode is no exception. I thought that that really stood out. You got, you know, excellent characterization and characters that you want to know more about. You don't, because they end up, you know, getting killed off or forgotten. But you do, you know, you feel like you could know more about them.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Great kind of like short story characters or something where he can very like deftly bring them to life with only, you know, a line or two or a scene here and there. Definitely agree with that. I mean, I'd say if you're making a list of like the most important episodes of the series, you'd probably have to include this one just because it's like the first proper comedy episode and it has such a bearing on the direction of the series going forward, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially in terms of, you know, there's not a huge number of X-Files comedic episodes compared to the, you know, standalones or the Myth Arc episodes, but this is, I think, the first. And, you know, it has a good blend of something that the X-Files sometimes does well, sometimes does not do well, which is kind of blending the comedic with the absurd or the dramatic. And I felt like this episode really did that because it alternates between, you know, outright comedy and then more drama, more, you know, terror and, you know, the theater of the absurd, as you might say. So I felt like it was a good touchstone for episodes that would come afterwards.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the credit for the success of this episode must go to Kim Manners. And, you know, they didn't really ease him in gently to the X-Files because his first episode was Die Hand, die Verletzt, you know, very extreme, very scary stuff. And then this one, like the first comedy episode. And one of the things he used to talk about was how, you know, I think he felt this could end up being a disaster. I think there were other people in the crew who were kind of a bit apprehensive about how this one would turn out. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think Manners did a good job here. And yeah, he deserves a lot of credit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like no one probably will contest, he's one of the greatest directors that the show ever had. And I do think, you know, I don't know, Darren Morgan, you know, he wrote some great episodes, but he didn't write that many. So you don't have a huge amount to base an opinion off of. He never directed one until season 10. So as far as his directorial style versus his writing style, I don't know. But I think that Kim Manners, you know, I think this episode really benefits from that. It would have been interesting to see if Darren had been given, you know, free reins, if he had been the director of, you know, this episode or even other episodes like Clyde Bruckman and Jose Chung, you know, what would the reception have been? Would it have been as favorable, or would it, you know, maybe have a little bit of mixed reviews? I don't know.
That's interesting because I've heard Darren Morgan interviewed about this one and he sort of said that he was on set, you know, through the filming of it. And he'd been told, I think, by Carter, like, just keep an eye on the filming, make sure they make sure they do what you want them to, you know, mm-hmm. not that he had control, but, you know, make sure the kind of what happens matches what you intended. And Darren Morgan said that, you know, everybody was just saying the lines a little bit wrong, but not wrong enough that he could, like, really feel comfortable in intervening, you know. So, yeah, I think, like, whereas the crew thought this might be a disaster, but were generally pretty pleased about how it turned out. Certainly, if you read a lot of Darren Morgan interviews, he wasn't overly pleased about the final result, which is a real shame because I think it's a very strong episode. I think he was kind of pleased with how Jose Chung and Clyde Bruckman turned out, and he's less fond of this one and War of the Coprophages. I mean, where do you think this one like ranks in the Darren Morgan canon then, as a, you know, compared to those other episodes?
For me, War of the Coprophages as well as Jose Chung are up there for me. Clyde Bruckman is a very good episode. It's a very solid episode. More on a personal level, it's not one of my favorites. You know, don't ban me from the podcast, but I would go as far as to say it is a little overrated in my opinion, in my very controversial opinion. But I feel like Humbug probably ranks somewhere in the middle in terms of his efforts. I would say, to me, at this point in time, it's stronger than the Weremonster episode. But that's because this had more of a, in my opinion, more of a definitive story to tell. It was more of a monster of the week. The Weremonster certainly had a story, a plot, and a monster, but it was very meta, and it was playing with what the X-Files was. And part of that was because it was in season 10, and, you know, Darren Morgan had not written for the show in, you know, decades. So I think he was kind of reestablishing his style. I'd say Humbug probably falls right in the middle behind a couple of his classics.
Yeah, I guess I think so too. I think with me, I definitely put Clyde Bruckman and Jose Chung in the top two places, and I'd kind of alternate with them depending on which day of the week you ask me. But probably this one next. I mean, the Weremonster, yeah, I probably liked that. In the immediate aftermath of season 10, I probably would have put Weremonster higher, but it's kind of fell back a bit for me since then. Have you got any more particular favourite moments? I mean, one of mine, I love the moment where you see Duchovny pose, kind of hands on hips, right towards the end of the episode. I think that's kind of a great visual punchline. Anything else that stands out to you as a particularly good moment?
I really enjoyed the funeral scene. I felt like that was the great balance between, as I said earlier, the comic, the comedic part, and the absurdity part. I mean, that's your introduction to all the circus freaks, and you suddenly see the ground start to shake beneath the coffin, and nobody seems all that particularly surprised except Mulder and Scully. I mean, they know the guy. Obviously, it's, you know, someone's funeral is perfectly appropriate to do that sort of stunt. And I just thought that really set it up really well. Mulder had a great line of dialogue there about, can't wait to see what the wake has, or, you know, what the wake is like. And I just felt like that kind of summed up the episode really well in terms of what Darren Morgan was trying to do with his style of writing.
Yeah, I guess I think what I said on the main podcast was like the kind of actual murder storyline feels just a little bit kind of rote, you know. It's pretty good. What really elevates this are kind of the humor and the kind of the observations that Darren Morgan makes in his script, because like you kind of get in the middle of the episode, it's kind of, it's like 10 to 15 minutes of screen time where like Mulder and Scully's investigation doesn't advance very much, but it's just so much fun to see what they're up to and who they come across. And, you know, yeah, it's an episode where the digressions are a large part of the charm and the pleasure of it, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, is there anything else you wanted to flag up about Humbug before we proceed?
Overall, definitely one of the strongest for season two. Important for many reasons. First and foremost, you know, the first comedy episode, and I think it really does kind of set the stage for how other writers, including, you know, Darren, would kind of pattern comedic episodes after this.
So, the Kalasari is episode 21 of season 2. It was written by Sara B. Charno and directed by Michael Vijar. And this is the episode in which Mulder and Scully investigate the death of a young boy whose family is then plagued by a series of tragic events. Yeah, again, this is one I was able to talk about on the main podcast, and I had a good time sort of tearing this one apart with Clara Cook. what do you think, Andrew? Do you like this episode?
I'd say it's probably just average. I don't hate it, but I lost interest probably 3/4 of the way through. The plot takes so many different turns, twists and turns, and just kind of, I found myself losing interest. There's some elements to it I like, some characters in it that I like, but on the whole, it's not that impressive of an episode.
Yeah, I feel much the same way. I think it's, I mean, there's so much good stuff in season two, but this is probably one of the weaker outings. I mean, it has some memorable aspects. The tease is pretty memorable with the death of the child. This actually was the only episode of The X-Files to receive an 18 rating in the UK, which is kind of the maximum classification you can receive. 15 is the next one down, which a lot of episodes got. Because of that opening sequence. So my question, I guess, is like, do you think this episode is like too graphic, and does it deal with the subject matter of, you know, loss of a child, grief, etc.? Does it deal with those things particularly well, do you think?
I wouldn't say particularly well. I did find the teaser kind of disturbing. Absolutely. So I can understand. I didn't know that what you just said, that fact about the UK rating, but it's not surprising because, I mean, that's that sort of stuff is, you know, not something that normally anyone's comfortable with seeing on TV. I felt like the whole twist with the boy who is seemingly behind what's been going on, the older brother, he was a twin, and his twin, whatever the twin's name was a stillborn. Mm. And that doesn't emerge until the very end of the episode, which is supposedly the emotional, you know, crux for, you know, the evil, the strange happenings that have been going on, what presumably killed the brother, what killed the father. So that felt like that was kind of just a last minute thing they threw in there. So no, I wouldn't say it handled it really well. I felt like it was pretty uneven.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think some of like the internal logic of like the plotting doesn't really stand up in the cold light of day. So with that being said, it's a case of, do you get swept up like in it moment to moment? You know, do you find it scary and all that kind of thing? And people's mileage will kind of vary on that, I suppose. I mean, I find some of the stuff like with the chickens and things kind of unintentionally kind of funny and amusing. But I don't know if you felt the same way or not.
Yeah, well, that chicken did not look real. That looked like a rubber chicken if I ever saw one. But yeah, no, like you said, it feels like it demands a lot from you because there's all these twists and turns, and it does have a very creepy feel to it. And yet it also has some aspects that are kind of so strange that you, like you said, almost laughable, and you just kind of fall out of it, I think.
I tell you, also, this is one of the episodes where like Scully experiences and sees a hell of a lot really in the climax of this episode. And it's episodes like this that, you know, when people moan a bit about, Scully staying a skeptic, it's things like this that actually make you think there is some validity to that point.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, you wonder how she rationalizes away what she sees at the end of this episode. What about, I mean, I'll tell you what's significant about this episode. First appearance of Chuck Burks, played by Bill Dow. So he only goes on to be in around half a dozen episodes, I believe. But like, what do you think about Chuck? He's a nice little recurring character, I think.
Oh, I love Chuck. He should have gotten a spinoff. He should have been in the Lone Gunman is what he should have been. But no, I like that. You're right. I was going to point that out. Actually, I wrote it down. It's his first episode. He is in, I think, a total of 6 episodes. Woefully underused, in my opinion. But you also have in this episode the character of Karen Kossoff.
Mm. Oh, yes, that's right.
Who I don't remember. She was first in Irresistible in season 2. I don't remember her in that episode. I'd have to rewatch it. But she is a social worker in this episode. She's a social worker. She has a great turn in season 4's Elegy, kind of counseling Scully. And she's great in that episode. She was in Founder's Mutation this last season as well. So, you know, very small, you know, recurring character for a very short period of time. But I felt like he had some good acting from the both of them in this episode.
Yeah. So, yeah, you should check out Irresistible. She has a nice scene in, like, the middle of that episode where Scully returns to Washington, like, in the middle of the case. Yeah, that's good stuff. And in Founder's Mutation, she's, like, a different character, isn't she? Sister Mary.
Yeah, she's a Catholic nun, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was good to see, you know, that actress back again in season 10. Yeah, as regards Chuck, I think you're definitely right about the Lone Gunman thing. Actually, I'd have probably been happy to see the Lone Gunman a little less and see Chuck a little more.
Exactly, yeah. You know, he's got potential, and I think I am glad that he at least is in 6 episodes. You know, the X-Files does kind of tend to, you know, create a couple good characters, but they're only in 1, maybe 2 episodes, and you know, you don't have too many recurring aside from, you know, the big ones, of course, that everyone knows about. So it's nice to see those little characters that you really have to think about to remember who they are.
And I was going to ask you for any favorite moments, and I'll give you my favorite thing about this episode, but it's not really on screen. It's just that I came across a couple of quotes from Frank Spotnitz where he was saying that actually kind of a lot of work went into this episode to make it scarier. And I just liked the idea that this was never going to be a classic episode. but they would kind of work their socks off to make every single episode that went out as good as it could possibly be, you know, by the time they were done. And, you know, it probably meant that this went from being kind of a terrible episode to being this kind of almost serviceable outing that it is. So I kind of have always liked that quote because I think it kind of sums up like the ethos people worked to when they were working on the X-Files. But do you have any favorite moments like on screen from this episode? Anything else we haven't touched on?
we already touched on it. My favorite moment probably would be when Mulder and Scully consult with Chuck Burks. Like I said, the episode as a whole just doesn't really do it for me. There aren't too many standout moments that I think of when I, you know, when I think of it.
Yeah, Scully has a good line, I think, to Mulder saying, "Did you ever hear about wind in kindergarten?" That's kind of like a
yeah, good.
Kind of like a comeback to him. Yeah, that's a good moment. There isn't a huge amount of humor in the episode, or at least there's not a huge amount of intentional humor. But there are some rubber chickens, like we said.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so tomorrow on the podcast, it's F Emasculata and Soft Light. In the meantime, though, you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast, and you can find us on Facebook as well. If you type in XCast, you should find our page and our group, which is called X-Files Basement, the XCast Podcast Fan Group. Until next time, listeners, trust no one.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.